Welcome to the Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the Grill Room is definitely on our tab. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
Fairy tale time on the PGA Tour. First, Bubba Watson winning in dramatic fashion in Shanghai, and then another youngster winning in Mississippi. Hi, I'm Bob Bubka, here with Alex Maselli. Well, he's not exactly here. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to thank everybody that contacted me, wishing me well after my recent surgery, including Tom Lehman and his lovely wife, Melissa. Very special to hear from them. As I said, Alex is not with me. He's in Turkey right now, but he was in Shanghai for the HSBC Champions. As we said last week, he's definitely a traveling man. Let's go to Alex Maselli. Alex in Turkey. First, how was the flight to China and your flight from China to Turkey?
Well, you know, Bobby, thanks for bringing me in. The flight to China is about 13 hours from the West Coast and really wasn't too bad, actually. And I think everything worked fine. When I got to China, I was got there around something like 7, 8 o'clock at night, went right to bed, woke up the next morning. It was like I never flew. It was perfect. I can't say the same for the flight from Shanghai to Istanbul. I think I'd rather have my teeth drilled next time.
What was bad about it?
Well, you know, sitting next to some guy that needed more room than his seat could provide. The guy in front of me thinking that it was okay to put his seat all the way back. And I was getting a pretty good feeling for what a sardine felt like in a can.
Well, you're so right, though. And all of that is just luck of the draw. When you get on a flight, you never know, you know, when things like that are going to occur.
No, you know, people talk about men and women and how, you know, there's this discrimination thing. I would always much rather fly next to a woman than a man. How's that? Always.
Well,
period. Bar none.
I would think that 99% of the male population probably feels that same sentiment. So I'm not surprised by that.
Oh, but, you know, it's just easier. It's so hard. I mean, I got on a plane, and it's over 10 hours from Shanghai to Istanbul, and at least 8 of them were torturous, really torturous. I mean, just like, I didn't really want to be doing it. And there's no place to go. Where are you going to go? Even when you stand up, you know you have to sit down at some point. I mean, it's just not a good thing. And it's dark the whole way, I mean, because you're always flying in darkness on that flight. We're in the San Francisco to Shanghai flight. We were always in light, which was fine. You just close the windows, but you're always in darkness. You just never feel the same. And then you get off and you arrive in Istanbul around 4 o'clock in the morning. You know.
Let me ask you this, Alex. When you land in China, is it Americanized? I mean, do you feel comfortable with, you know, where you have to go for your luggage, where you have to go for your passport? Is all of that made easy for you, or is that a difficult process?
Well, I think all immigration and customs are pretty much the same. There's not really much difference. When you get out, though, you know, Shanghai is the largest city in China by population, by far. And when you get out, there's this, you know, you're supposed to find this person that's going to take you from the airport to the golf, from the airport to the hotel. And I'm walking, get out, and I turn left, and then come back around and turn right. And there's all these people. There's this long line of people, and a lot of them with signs about, you know, who they're picking up, so forth and so on. I keep walking and walking and walking. Then I'm wondering if I'm going to have to go all the way back because I've missed my name somewhere. So from that standpoint, it can be a little complicated. But I found my guy quite easily and had no problem. But the drive, and again, easily, the drive, if everything is good, is over just a little over an hour from the airport to the hotel. Last night when we were driving, it was over 2 hours to get from the hotel to the airport.
So to give our listeners a perspective of crowded, most people have seen scenes or have been personally to Times Square in New York City. Is that what Shanghai's like all over the city?
Well, no, I mean, that's, you know, you take Times Square, that's it's very concentrated with a lot of different people. Shanghai is like Manhattan and Long Island put into one. I mean, that's how big it is. It's just huge. If you take the New York metropolitan area and double it, I think you probably get Shanghai. So that just gives you how big it is. But there's no concentration per se. It's not like, you know, in New York City, as an example, the downtown started as downtown. People lived in Manhattan. I don't think there's as many people living in the central part of Shanghai now as there used to be, because there's a lot more buildings, tall buildings and so forth and so on. So there's really never that concentration that you're talking about, like in a Times Square or something like that. But the amount of people that are there, there's a lot of people here, or a lot of people there at the time when I was there.
What about, Alex, if you come out of the airport, you were fortunate you had somebody there to pick you up. Somebody coming, and they have to take a taxi cab somewhere. When they get in that cab, will that driver speak English? Will you know the currency that you need? Do you have that information?
Well, you know, most taxi drivers, I don't think, speak English.
Wow.
So usually when you get into a taxi, hopefully the person that gets in the taxi at the airport or at the hotel will tell the taxi driver where to go, and that's how it works. And that's when I was – when I went down like to downtown Shanghai, I took a taxi from my hotel to the train station, which is like the metro station, and then I took the metro all the way in. And my person at the hotel told them exactly what, you know, where to go for where I was going. So that's the easy part. But if you got to do it alone or on your own, it can be much more complicated. You should always, first of all, you should always have a card that has the name, address, and phone number of your hotel. So at the very least, if you get into a cab and you can't remember the name of the place, or you can't remember how to explain it, you just show them the card, and they'll know where to take you. So those are things that you should always do. But you know, sometimes it gets a little complicated when you're downtown or something like that, and people don't speak English.
Yeah, the one last thing, and we'll move on to some golf. But I think this is fascinating because so few people ever get the privilege, honor, opportunity. You put in the word that you want there. To visit China. One thing that some people would be leery of, you get in the cab and he goes, you know, the so-called long route and triples your fare. Not knowing where you're going, you have no defense against that.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think that's not as prevalent as you might find in other places. I wouldn't really worry too much about that. You know, crime in general, which that's really a crime, I mean, when you think about it. But those kind of things in general are very minimal comparatively to the West, what happens in China. You know, as an aside, though, Bob, as you were talking about the taxi driver and speaking English, we had a 17-year-old play in the WGC HSBC Champions this week, a guy named Marty Doe. His first name is different, but he likes to be called Marty, so it's Marty Doe. So they brought Marty in on Wednesday for a press conference, and the way the process works there is you ask the question. If you're American or English, you ask the question in English. The translator translates it to the player, if he's Chinese. The player then answers the question in Chinese, and then the translator translates it back in English. Vice versa, if you're talking like the Bubba Watson last night, we ask the question, Bubba answers it, and then the translator says the question and answer in Chinese as well afterwards. So anyways, Marty Doe is up there on Wednesday, and he's getting all these questions from the Chinese media and answering them all in Chinese, and then the interpreter, the translator, would go ahead and translate what he said. So then I walked up to the translator at the end of the press conference, and I wanted to ask Marty a couple more questions. And so I said, you know, would you mind hanging around? He goes, no. So he tells Marty, I want to ask him a couple more questions in Chinese. And then Marty goes, oh, that's fine, no problem, in perfect English.
Hey, I have seen that story over and over again on the PGA Tour and even on the LPGA Tour. I mean, it's it's something that the foreign players come to realize that they have at their disposal. Obviously, it's more difficult for an American player to say no to you, but when they make believe they don't speak English, you got big problems. Well, we speak English here in the Grill Room. We heard enough of Alex's travails from San Francisco to China, China to Istanbul. Sounds very exotic. And when we come back, guess what? We're going to go around the world of golf. And thanks for being with us. We're in the Grill Room, and we're presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage, and powered by Golf Week. It's the insider's golf destination.
You're listening to the Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for us in the Grill Room. And we're going to go around the world of golf and bring in, once again, Alex Maselli, who was at the HSBC Champions event. What was it like? Dynamic finish for sure, but good performances by some other players as well.
Well, it was, I personally, the last nine holes were pretty amazing, I thought. I mean, it's like nobody wanted to win the golf tournament. And then all of a sudden, there was this desire to win it by Bubba Watson with that shot at the end. But, you know, Tim Clark, I thought, played really, really well. And he actually, if you really look at everything that happened, he's the guy that played the best down the stretch. I mean, Bubba makes an eagle out of the bunker, but which is certainly miraculous, but that's one shot. That's one good shot out of, like, I don't know, five holes. He makes one really good shot. So I was very impressed with Tim Clark and how he played. And Bubba Watson, you know, obviously won the golf tournament and was in tremendous style. I mean, that was the thing. It was a great win, but I think partly because of how he did it. I thought it was pretty amazing. You know, Martin Keimer, bad mistake at the end. Graham McDowell, if you talk to him, said, you know, I never really had my A game, which he clearly didn't. He never seemed to have his A game. Ricky Fowler thought that his hybrid into the 18th hole when he was tied for the lead would have been right in the middle of the green, and in turn was not only not in the middle of the green, but in the water. So I don't know what you say about that. I mean, we always talk about Ricky and what kind of a guy he is. He's certainly a great guy, but, you know, you got to finish golf tournaments, and he seems to have lacked that ability to finish golf tournaments. So all in all, I thought it was a pretty good good week and a good event.
Certainly a good week for Bubba Watson. Let's listen to what he had to say following his victory.
It means a lot to win outside the U.S. That's one of my goals for my career. My goal has always been to get 10 wins. Now I've got 7. Win a World Golf Championship, one of our premier events, and again outside the U.S. This means a lot. This is very special to me. This one's going to be go down for a while for me, not because of the great shots that I hit, but because of just winning here.
All right, Bubba Watson. As you heard Alex describe, wins in dynamic fashion and getting his season off to a good start. Hey, let's come back to the United States. the Sanderson's Farms Championship. Another fairy tale story. Rookie Nick Taylor wins for the first time on the PGA Tour. He's the first Canadian board winner on the PGA Tour since Mike Weir way back in 2007. Fairy tale story, you ask? Well, it certainly was. Got married in May, then managed to finish tied for 21st on the Web.com Tour, which gets him some starts, obviously, on the PGA Tour, and then wins for the first time on the PGA Tour, wins $720,000, but, Alex, I think you'd agree with me, far more important, he gets to play on the PGA Tour for the next couple of years.
Right. I mean that kind of status is critical because get to set your own schedule, know where you're going to play. We've talked about this over and over again. That's the biggest part of the equation. He'll make his money, but he'll be able to control his destiny a lot better because of that win than, you know, in the situation he was in previous to that.
Absolutely. It's so huge getting that first victory. Nevertheless, I think he gets to go to the Masters with that victory. Am I right?
No, it's an opposite field event, so I don't think so.
Oh, wow. That's got to hurt. Boy, coming that close to going down Magnolia Lane and you don't achieve it. Well, we talked about the HSBC. That also was the European event. So we had the information from Alex, but now I want to bring up, they finally gave out the Caddy of the Year Award on the European Tour, and it goes to Craig Connolly, and he caddies for Martin Keimer. And we were very lucky at the Ryder Cup, invited to a private party right next to the clubhouse, as a matter of fact. There was only five or six of us in there, including the number one man at Talk Sport, Alan Brazil. So Connolly came over, a long chance, and you get to do it quite frequently, Alex. It's fascinating, the stuff that you hear from Cat.
Well, yeah, they're inside, and guys don't mind talking to them, so they're going to learn a lot of things that, you know, we're not going to learn, and this is good and bad. I mean, there's just so much that they get that we don't get.
Kick out of Craig. Started to talk, obviously, about the runaway victory that his player, Mr. Keimer, fashioned together down at Pinehurst. And he told us that they had set a goal for the first 36 holes. They said, if we can shoot this for the first 36 holes, we'd have a champion. We'll have a good shot at winning this U.S. Open. After 36 holes, he said, he turned to Keimer and said, hey, boss, I think we're about 12 shots ahead of our goal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's just so – you remember Bubba Watson on Sunday on the 18th tee, after he pretty much made a mess of the back nine, just said to Ted Scott, his caddy, you know, goes, you know, Teddy, I know that I've pretty much made mincemeat out of this back nine so far, but if I can make an eagle here, we still got a chance. I mean, you know, not many people think that way, and I think that's a testament to where Bubba Watson's game is going and his head is going. Same thing with Martin Keimer.
All right. Craig Connolly, a very modest guy. This is what he had to say after receiving that award as the Caddy of the Year on the European Tour.
But it's very nice to, you know, to have the votes and the support of your fellow colleagues. Of course, it's all down to what the player does. Nothing to do with us at all. If they have a good year, then you've got a good chance of winning it. But it's a great honour and very, very fortuitous to win it this year.
And, of course, we couldn't resist, Alex. We had to ask him, what makes a good caddy? Here's what Connolly had to say.
What makes a good caddy? I think you have to ask the players, or ask Martin or whoever else I've worked for, or any other player what they think a good caddy is. But I would say, you know, adaptability, adapting to someone else's personality, because we all know how to do the job, but when it comes down to it, it's knowing that person that you're working for, knowing when to say the right thing and when to stay quiet. Very, very lucky that Martin's very easygoing, you know, doesn't ask a lot of a caddy. and he doesn't put too much pressure on you. He expects you to know what to do and to prepare well. But he's very easygoing, takes responsibility for everything he does. And obviously he works extremely hard, so the least I can do is work as... I don't think I will ever to work as hard as him, but I try.
All right, let's go to the LPGA Tour, Mizuno Classic. Another thrilling playoff on the LPGA Tour, Alex.
You're right, Bob, and the Mizuno Classic was another thrilling five-hole playoff with Mai Hing Lee winning over Kota no Kazuma and Ai Hee Lee. Pretty interesting, I would say. I wasn't there, but I was close enough. A lot closer than you were, Bob. I know that the Dame Laura Davies was there, Morgan Pressel, Kari Webb, and Jessica Corder among those that were players that were just one shot back. It was interesting because I was sitting next to Doug Ferguson, and he says, hey, Laura Davies has got a chance to win this golf tournament, which I found quite interesting. Obviously didn't get it done, but it's good to see that she's playing well.
Yeah, she really is. And I go back to when we were covering, the Open Championship at Hoylake this past season. I was sitting in the radio booth where you and I work from, and all of a sudden somebody taps me on the shoulder, and I turn around. It was Laura Davies, and I was quite taken aback by that. And she said, I just wanted to stop by, see how you were doing. Haven't seen you in a while. Which I thought was pretty nice. And then I got an opportunity to congratulate her on being now referred to. If it's a male, the high honor is sir. If it's a female, the high honor is dame. And Laura Davies now is Dame Lori Davies. So pretty good stuff. All right, the web.com tour, Alex, Champions Tour, they're focusing on their qualifying schools. Up next, Inside Golf Week with Alex Buscelli.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Want to improve your golf game? Improve your vision. Callaway and Transitions Optical have created Callaway Neox Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, designed to enhance visual performance while playing golf. They automatically adjust color and darkness, sharpen depth perception, and offer superior clarity. You'll have more accurate distance vision and be better able to see the terrain and contours all day, regardless of weather and light conditions. Buy Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses at CallawayGolf.com or learn where to get a pair in your prescription at transitions.com/sunwear/Neox.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Buscelli.
Now it's time for our Inside Golf Week segment, where we take a look at some of the other stories presented by Golf Week staff writers. This week, Alex, let's take a look at your story you wrote concerning that young Chinese golfer, Marty Doe. Is he the real deal?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell, Bob. When you talk to him, so as I said, he speaks great English. He actually made it through the first stage of Web.com Q School, so he's playing in the second stage in Los Angeles, which I'm not sure is this week or next week. So he's got game. He didn't finish last, I can tell you that, at the HSBC Champions. He finished past some of the other players, including Charles Schwartzel, who I can remember off the top of my head, and Billy Horschel, who was the FedEx Cup winner. So he's got some game. There's no question about that. But what he has said is his reasoning for turning pro now is because he wants to learn how to play better. So, you know, Tiger didn't come out early because he wanted to learn how to play better. Jordan Spieth didn't come out early because he wanted to learn how to play better. They already knew how to play. So it's going to be a work in progress for Doe for a while. But, you know, it's going to be beneficial, I think, if he gets on the web.com tour for him to get – he'll certainly get thrown in the fray pretty quickly. And, you know, you just never know. I mean, there's going to be a player from China that's going to certainly – light the PGA Tour up at some point in their career, and it could happen sooner rather than later, the way the growth of the game is going worldwide and specifically in China. And Marty Doe could certainly be that, could be that player. Well, no matter how young or how advanced in age, wearing the proper eyewear is important. In Focus on Vision, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, Dr. Fraser Horn, a Nike color science expert, talks to Bob about the unlimited advantages of wearing transitioned adaptive sunglasses on the course.
Dr. Fraser Horn, who is the Nike color science expert. First off, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Talk a little bit about why color is so important in the Nike Max transition sunglasses.
It's fun to talk about something I have a passion for, which is golf and eyes, to tell you the truth, being an eye doctor. The thing with color is that when we test patients' eyes, in athletes' eyes, it's black on white. But we know that really when you're out on the course, there's nothing really black or white. So what we've done is every color has a certain wavelength. And the scientists at Nike have basically looked at what colors are important on the golf course and ends up being that it's certain wavelengths. So through the glasses, we actually are able to enhance certain colors so that certain details really stand out compared to the background. And likewise, certain things that are just kind of visual noise, we can dampen by basically filtering that out. So what we do is through the sunglasses, we design a tint that really enhances those critical colors, which end up being, you know, the color of the grass on the greens. That way you can pick up those critical details. Also helps to make the ball just kind of pop out. So it's just really made to enhance your time out on the course.
Just listening to you, and we're talking with Dr. Fraser Horn, who is the Nike color science expert. With that ability to adjust the color of these glasses, as you mentioned, if you make the green more vibrant, it's going to be a lot easier to read the breaks.
Yes, that's the goal, because, I mean, you know as well as I do, it's a drive for show, putt for dough. So if we can make it to where the putting, you can see that break, you can see that line, it's huge. So anything we can do to help is what our goal.
Of course, very important is the fact that now you take this color science and it's in the lenses. You incorporate that into the transitions adaptive sunglass technology, and then it works in various shades of light. I mean, when you go play 18 holes of golf, it may get cloudy, it may get darker, it may get brighter, and to have adaptive sunwear certainly has to be an advantage.
Oh, yes, Bob. This is totally a win-win for everybody when we get into the transitions adaptive technology. You know, many of us will try to play first thing in the morning or in the evening, and or if you're like us in Oregon, it gets cloudy every once in a while. So the ability for us to have lenses that adapt to the varying brightness conditions are huge. And it just makes it so that way you don't have to worry about your sunglasses. You can just worry about your golf game.
Thanks to Dr. Horn. We'll take a short break. Then it's on to news and notes. You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage, and powered by Golf Week.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The light changes, the lens changes. It's as simple as that. Nike and Transitions Optical have collaborated to create a new lens technology that is both responsive to light and specifically engineered to sport performance. Nike Max Transitions Golf Tint Sunglasses will help improve contour recognition on the golf course and increase ball pop. You'll literally see your game in a whole new light. Buy a pair today at Nike.com.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Okay, we're back in the Grill Room. He's Alex. I'm Bob. And it's time for news and notes. Big item to get us started. George O'Grady, chief executive of the European Tour, to retire after 40 years in the business. And he's been the chief executive since 2005. Only the third CEO the European Tour has ever had. Pretty amazing when you think about it in those terms, Alex.
Well, you know, you say that, and if people are wondering who they were. They were John Jacobs, and then obviously Ken Schofield, and now George O'Grady. So you say that, but how many commissioners do you think the PGA Tour's had since its inception?
Two.
No, well, really, Joe Dye would have been one.
Oh, okay,
and that,
three.
And that, right, and three. So that's what I'm saying. And so it's not that unusual, but it just seems like it should be more than it is. George, this has been something that's been out there and talked about for a long time. This isn't something that just happened overnight. This was a situation that was going to come to fruition at some time this year. My understanding is that the European Tour wanted to wait till after the Ryder Cup to make the announcement. George O'Grady will retire as a chief executive once a new chief executive is found, but he will still be involved with the European Tour and be involved heavily until the Olympics, because he wants to be part of the Olympics involvement by the European Tour and by golf itself. So he will be involved in the Olympics all the way till then, and then I think he'll take his leave. So I know George. I think it's fair to say I know George pretty well, and I respect George and respect what he's done. And I think the next commissioner, or the next chief executive, I should say, that comes into that job, he's got a lot of work to do.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I just want to offer my congratulations on behalf of Janice Self and myself to George O'Grady, because he has been certainly a very good friend of the Grill Room. Anytime we asked anything of him, he was very giving of his time. So, George, whatever you're going to do, do it well, my friend, and stay healthy. Now, a possible successor for that job, somebody that we know very well, Guy Kinnings, has been mentioned quite a bit. Do you think he's going to be the man?
You know, I think it's very hard to tell. Certainly, Guy Kinnings would be an excellent chief executive of the European Tour. I don't think there's any questions about that. Spending 20 years at IMG and really basically holding that organization together on the golf side. So there's no question that he would be a huge asset to the European Tour. However, that being said, there's a lot going on with the European Tour. He certainly has a job where he seems to be relatively happy. New ownership at IMG within the last 6 months. I think Guy has more responsibility and is doing more than ever before. And for him to take the job at the European Tour, maybe it just doesn't fit him. Not that he couldn't handle it, but maybe it just doesn't fit him. And then that's, of course, if in fact that they decide that they're going to offer it to them. I know that there's been one other person that's been approached already, my understanding is, from the European Tour to talk about the position. So we'll see what happens. I don't even want to say Guy Kinnings is the leader in the clubhouse, because I don't believe that. I just believe that he is the guy that most people believe would be the best fit, do the best job. But that does not mean that he will take that job.
You alluded to the fact that they're talking to somebody else. Can you share with our Grill Room listeners? I have a feeling it's you that they're talking to.
Well, I cannot share with our Grill Room listeners who it is, but I will confirm categorically that it is not me.
Boy, that would be some. That would be an announcement that would certainly rock the world of golf. Alex Maselli, new chief executive officer of the European Tour. Speaking of new, this one came out of left field. New director of communications for the USGA. He's an old friend of ours, none other than Adam Barr. I mean, what, did that catch you by surprise?
Yes, I think shocked would have been a fair assessment of or disbelief when I read it, Jim Achenbach's piece in Golf Week, that Adam Barr is going to be the new director of communications. I don't know if they've announced it. I don't think they've even announced it yet, but I am very, very surprised.
Well, Adam Barr, a good friend, so never hurts to have good friends in high places. Fox Sports, how about this one, Alex? Good fit here, I think. Julie Inkster added to its golf coverage team.
Well, here's an interesting scenario. I mean, first of all, yeah, I think Julie's done a good job when I've heard her do some Golf Channel stuff. But, you know, they have Brad Faxon in the booth, rather not the booth, but the studio. They have David Fay, former executive at the USGA, talking about rules. They have Julie Inkster doing coverage. And then they have Greg Norman in the booth with
Joe Buck.
They're very far behind in really putting together a team. I mean, they have one person on the ground and one person in the tower at 18 that they've determined, at least at, you know, outside of Buck, and that's it. So I'm glad that they hired Julie because I think she does a good job. But my point is holy cow, what else we got going on? I mean, this is November, for goodness sake.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see. They're going to have to put the pedal to the metal, as they say. It's amazing. You mentioned the name Ricky Fowler earlier in the show, and I thought the statement he issued following the Ryder Cup, saying, I thought Tom did a great job of talking to the guys. He had been there plenty of times. I enjoyed the time I got to spend with him. I respect him. He is a legend within the game. Some things may have gotten blown a little out of proportion, but obviously we didn't play as well as we needed in order to win, and that's what I call manning up.
Well, he said that in China. I'm trying to think who was there at the time. I think Dave Schlosky and myself and maybe Doug Ferguson, but he said it to us. And, you know, it's true. It was in that conversation all about the task force, because he's on the task force and that kind of stuff. But he's right. And I think this just gets back to the heart of the problem. You know, some people just didn't like the way Watson did things, which is fine. You don't have to love him. Some people obviously didn't have a problem with the way Watson did things. Ricky Fowler is a good example of that. It was a wasted Ryder Cup in the end, just because there was just too much animosity, too much backfighting, and so forth and so on. You don't want that at a Ryder Cup. Win or lose, that's fine, but you don't want to have what we've been having, what we had at this Ryder Cup. And so I think Ricky put it in perspective to a large extent, but there'll be people on that team, there'll be people that were in that room that will not agree with what Ricky had to say, and that I think that's the difficult part. It's like having Congress, for goodness sake. Anyways, that's Ricky's position. Obviously, someone like Ted Bishop would have another position. So speaking of the Ryder Cup, we got former PGA of America President Ted Bishop kindly agreed to talk to Bob, and that will be next in the Grill Room.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Well, we're back from break. I'm here in Turkey, and Bob's in Texas, and Ted Bishop is in Indianapolis. And Ted Bishop is going to be, well, probably lamenting the fact that everything that happened about a couple weeks ago is going to make the difference in him not being able to be part of his closing out ceremony that he would have had on a week from Friday in Indianapolis at the PGA annual meeting. He's going to talk, though, to Bob about the PGA of America support that's out there for him, what he plans to do now, and how proud he is of what he has accomplished in the job.
Short while ago, there was a midsection meeting of the PGA of America, and part of that meeting, they took a straw poll on the punishment versus the crime situation with the 38th president of the PGA of America, Ted Bishop. And, you know, the midsection is one of the more respected sections in the country, and it was unanimous. Every pro stood up feeling, indicating that, you know, the punishment didn't fit the crime. And I thought it'd be good if we had an opportunity to talk to Ted Bishop. And that had to make you feel good when you were informed of their feelings at that meeting.
Well, it did, Bob. But I think even more important than that was just the appreciation that I had for all the professionals in the Mets section, I think, who recognized that the last 2 years had been a good time for the PGA of America. And, you know, I think they respected the leadership qualities that I exhibited during my 23 months as president of the PGA of America. And so that was gratifying. I don't think I would have gotten that level of support from that section had that not been the case. And you're exactly correct when you say that that particular section is probably one of the most respected, if not the most respected PGA sections in the United States.
You know, during your tenure, so many good things happened, and I'd like our listeners to hear from you a few of the things that you're really proud that got accomplished.
Well, you know, Bob, it's kind of ironic. A year ago at our annual meeting in San Diego, I thought it might have been the most historic annual meeting that we've ever had in the history of the PGA of America. And the reason I say that is because we announced that we were going to distribute to all 41 sections approximately $100,000 per section of new monies that would be able to filter back to the sections for them to be able to use and whatever they wanted to use them to improve the lives of members of their own individual sections. And, you know, these monies came from they were part of the TV rights extension deal that we had done with NBC on the Ryder Cup. It was a couple of business development deals that, you know, we had done through National Rental Car, Ralph Lauren. And then, of course, some monies that were directed from some of the things we were able to accomplish with the PGA Tour. So, you know, it was a landmark time, and it was a great statement, I think, by the PGA of America that we were taking some of our financial resources and we were finding out a way that we could in turn distribute those funds to the sections, which again would benefit the rank and file PGA members. And, you know, I'd like to think that my whole term was really based on the member. I mean, when starting with the anchoring controversy and the fact that we took our stance, Bob, by doing that poll that we did with our members, and we found out, you know, where the members stood on this issue before we took a public stance. And, you know, I just would like to think when I look back in my time, everything that we tried to do was geared in some way, shape, or form towards the individual member. And, you know, I think that distribution of funding and the flexibility that we gave the sections to be able to use those monies any way they wanted to, many sections went out and hired a player development director, which is a person who has been able to go out to green grass facilities and try to assist golf professionals in implementing growth of the game programs that work that'll make them more successful on their job. So that's probably the one single thing that I took the most satisfaction out of.
You know, Ted Bishop, 38th president of the PGA of America, I've covered professional golf for a long, long time, but the club pro is someone that is dear to my heart. Long before I started broadcasting golf, had a relationship with the different club pros that I still have until this day. And I fully recognize what a difficult job it is to be out in that heat normally, hour after hour, trying to help their members play this game of golf better. And, you know, and then the other aspect, of course, is the female issue. And I know and I have known for a couple of years just how proud you are of two daughters that you have that are in the golf business themselves, and they're only in the golf business because of the family they grew up in. They grew to appreciate the game and wanted to do the game as their livelihood.
Well, you know, Bob, I've had a long record of service that pertain to women in golf, and you know, I take great pride in the fact that we started the Indiana Open here at my facility, and we actually hosted it for 10 years. We started the Central Indiana chapter of the Executive Women's Golf Association here at the Legends. We hosted the Girls High School State Championship for 15 years. You're right. I was very fortunate. I had two daughters that loved golf, played golf. They were Division I college players. They both went on to get into the business. But, you know, I served as a volunteer assistant coach to the Franklin High School girls golf team for 7 years. And, you know, during my time as president of PGA of America, I took a, I don't think it was a controversial stance, but it was certainly a pretty solid stance with the RNA on their exclusion of women as members in their association. We started a wonderful partnership with the PGA Tour Wives Association at our past two PGA championships, where we helped Habitat for Humanity and Blessings in a Backpack. And, you know, probably the most fun I had all summer was coaching my own PGA Junior League team. And I had five little girls on that team of 22 players. And so, you know, I have had no problems going to sleep every night, Bob, in the last couple of weeks, knowing the commitment that I've had to women in golf and that I will continue to have to women in golf for the rest of my working career.
And that's exactly what you should be appreciated for. What I really was proud of, Ted, after all this was said and done, you stated quite clearly how proud you were still to be a member of the PGA of America and would continue that pride.
Oh, that's exactly right, Bob. I mean, in fact, it's funny, prior to this phone call, I just got done, you know, outlining a couple of instruction programs that I'm going to implement in April of 2015. And, you know, one is based around Get Golf Ready, which I've been the national spokesperson for the past 4 or 5 years. And another one is a new program I've started called Discover Golf, which is kind of a scaled down version of Get Golf Ready for people that have never tried golf or have no idea what they're getting into. But, you know, I look forward to coaching my PGA Junior League team again next year. I think that program is really the bedrock of junior golf participation. And, you know, one of the visions that I had coming out of the Ryder Cup that I will share with you that, you know, nobody really knows about, and hopefully the PGA of America will follow up on it. But, you know, I sent some people internally at the PGA an email on that Saturday night at Glen Eagles after we'd gotten waxed in the alternate shot format for the second straight day. And I said, you know, I think that if the PGA of America wants to make a great statement on the Ryder Cup and its future, then we should take the PGA Junior League. And the way these matches are played, Bob, is they're nine-hole matches. They play them in three-hole segments, and they play a scramble format. Two people as partners, boys or girls, can pair up together, whatever. But they play in a three-hole segment. And I said to the PGA, when we get to the state, the regional, and the national competition, rather than playing a scramble format for all nine holes, I think we should play three holes alternate shot. We should play three holes best ball, and then we should play three holes scramble. And, you know, the vision I have is that 20 years from now, there'll be a player on our Ryder Cup team who will be talking about the first experience that he had playing alternate shot. And that was back when he played in the PGA Junior League years ago. So, you know, I do believe in those programs, and I think there's a lot of good things that, you know, the PGA of America offers its members. And, you know, I'll continue to participate and do whatever I can to help the PGA at the local level here in Indiana.
Ted Bishop here in the Grill Room with us. And one last thing before I let you go, and I certainly appreciate your time, Ted. I think you're right on the money. And you know what's strange about the alternate shot? It's played so rarely. But, you know, I had the opportunity of playing some. You've had the opportunity. It's really a fun way of playing golf, but you have to get comfortable with it because of the nature of alternate shot, even on the putting green. You have a birdie putt, but in the back of your mind, you're saying, don't knock it 3 or 4 feet by because my partner is going to be upset with me. It's a different mindset to play alternate shot.
Well, it really is, and I think that, you know, it should be incumbent upon all state golf associations and everybody that's running, you know, junior programs, even junior high and high school golf, figure out a way to work that part of the format, you know, into the picture. You know, for years I loved playing in our section pro assistant tournament. And, you know, one of the, it's a 36-hole tournament, and 18 holes is a better ball, and 18 holes is a Pinehurst alternate shot. And, you know, that's the only time all year we would play that format was in the pro assistant. And, you're exactly right. I mean, it's a very difficult but enjoyable format to play simply because we don't do it every day. And the putting becomes maybe the toughest aspect of it. If you're playing your own ball, you don't think anything about knocking a putt, you know, 3 or 4 feet by the hole. You just step up there and knock it in. But if you've got a partner, you feel bad about making the partner have to have that putt to finish the hole. And you're right, but I think the format becomes easier, it becomes more comfortable, as you say, the more that you play it. So, you know, I don't know that I'll have any future Ryder Cup players that come out of the Legends Golf Club here in Franklin, but I guarantee you one thing, Bob, my juniors are going to learn how to play alternate shot come hell or high water.
Let me run this by you, Ted, because I've been thinking about this quite a lot since Glen Eagles. You know, I think the first thing that has to be done so that we can reverse this tide of defeats at the Ryder Cup is somehow focus and identify the problem, try and crystallize it. It's very difficult in any situation in life to make things better if you don't know exactly what's wrong.
Yeah, and I think that was the whole purpose of the task force, Bob. I mean, you know, some people have even criticized the idea of having a task force. But, I mean, hey, when you've only won 2 Ryder Cups in the last 20 years, then I don't see anything wrong with getting a meeting of the minds in a room together and trying to do just what you said. Let's discuss all aspects of the Ryder Cup, and let's try to figure out, you know, what exactly we can do. And when that Ryder Cup task force was put together, there were 3 goals in mind. Number one was just to take a look at the captain selection process. And I think to try to develop a system of continuity where, you know, we had guys in the pipeline as assistant captains that might someday become a captain. We've never done that. Davis Love was the only captain we've had since 1990 that's been an assistant captain before he was a captain. Then I think the second thing is looking at how we pick players. Are we making our announcements, and are we shutting off the point system at the most opportune time? In 2016, the PGA of America's got to do something different because the PGA Championship's played the last week in July, and you can't set your team, you know, 8 or 10 players on your team 2 months before the Ryder Cup. And then the third thing, I think, is, you know, what needs to happen during the week that'll put our players in the best position that they can be in to win. And I think that's where you need the input of the players, and that's why 5 players were put on that task force. So, you know, I support the concept. I wish the guys well that are going to be part of it. That was something I was never going to be a part of. But, you know, I think it's a good idea. And, you know, the guys that are involved, they're going to give it their best shot. And it's all going to boil down to our team playing better, Bob. You know, fact of the matter is we got beat by 30-some shots, depending on what set of numbers you look at Glen Eagles. And in all fairness to Tom Watson, I don't care who the captain was, nobody was going to captain a winning team under those circumstances.
I agree with you there. Would you be in favor or opposed to a captain picking his entire team?
Well, you know, I think that's a great question. That's the first time I've heard that question I've heard an individual or two mention that concept. I've heard other people say we should go back to a system where we have 12 people determined, you know, based on points. I think that I wouldn't want to be a captain that's got to pick my 12 players, but, you know, I guess I wouldn't see anything wrong if you've got a point system to refer to and you're giving the captain the option to pull or draw off that point system and use that as a guideline. You know, I mean, what the heck? I mean, fact of the matter is the captain's probably going to have 2/3 of his team on that points list anyway, so probably wouldn't make much difference.
Ted Bishop, I can't thank you enough for doing this. And on behalf of people everywhere that love the game of golf, thank you for your service. And we certainly appreciate your time here in the Grill Room.
Well, Bob, I've always enjoyed the conversations that we've had over the past couple of years, and hopefully it's been the last time we ever have a chance to talk.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should, too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Certainly want to give a thank you to Ted Bishop, very gracious with his time. I was very interested in what he had to say. I know you're interested in what's next on the schedule. So we begin with the European Tour, and our man is on the scene at the Turkish Airlines Open. What's going on, Alex?
Well, Bob, you got to add the other part of that by the Ministry of Youth and Sport. You know, obviously everybody's ponying up money to put into this event, but it's going to be a good event. It's the third leg of the race to Dubai. Victor Dubuisson is defending. It's the first time I ever met Victor was at this event last year. It's a pretty strong field. Sergio Martin Keimer is here. Henrik Stenson is here. Lee Westwood is here. So I like the field. I think it'll be quite interesting. And this golf course is it's a good golf course. I thought that Victor Dubuisson last year just overpowered it with his length, even though it's really not set up for a long hitter. Colin Montgomery designed the golf course, and when Colin Montgomery tees it up this week as a sponsor's exemption, he will be teeing it up in his 600th European Tour event. So a lot of little milestones are going to be happening this week here in Turkey.
And we'll have an eye on Sergio Garcia to see how he plays. All right, on the LPGA Tour, Alex, Lorena Ochoa Invitational presented by Bannermax. And Lexi Thompson is the defending champion at a good golf course there in Mexico City.
Yeah, Club de Golf in Mexico City is a good golf course. Obviously, this is the last event to get yourself into the CME Group Tour Championship, which is next week, I believe. You know, everybody's got a season-ending event. For the women, it's an important event to get into this event, so we'll see what happens there. Most of the women that are in the event will already, you know, it's not like there's a lot of movement at the end, but there can be. Someone can come out of nowhere in Mexico and get themselves into the event, so we'll see what happens there.
All right, on the PGA Tour, they're going down to Mexico. Very strong field. Harris English defending, and some of the key players that are going to be there, Angel Cabrera, Eric Compton, Tony Finau, Padraig Harrington, Davis Love, and many, many others. This is the last official event before the Thanksgiving Christmas break. Everybody would like to end as a winner.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's Jim McCabe is going down there for us for Golf Week, so he'll be talking about, he'll be sending back a lot of stuff what's happening down there in Mexico. I've never been to the event. I know that a lot of the players like the event. If you remember correctly, that Fred Funk won there. I think you got to control your golf ball. I think, did Brian Gay win there once too? I just think you have to be a guy that can control your golf ball, and it's important. That's what that golf course brings, and it lends itself to. And it wouldn't surprise me if we have another first-time winner, which is really their opportunity to get into Kapalua as well. So we'll see what happens there. But and as you said, Bob, it alluded to another strong field down there in Mexico, and certainly a lot of strong fields during this wraparound season, fall part of the wraparound season.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, you know, down in Mexico, Alex. It's way too close. You need longer flights than that. I mean, Mexico to you is just a hop, skip, and a jump. But enjoy your time in Turkey, Alex.
I will, Bobby. And that's it for this week. You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage, and powered by Golf Week, where you get the inside story every week.
A big thank you to our partners, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, and to Golf Week. For Janice Self, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bubka, thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show and on golfweek.com.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.